Welcome back to Reflections. You're your host, Jorge Gonzalez. And we were talking about the blockades, the one in Cuba, basically Venezuela, with anything having to do with narco traffic, these boats being blown up. So the blockades are happening there. And then the blockade of the blockade. I'm kind of laughing because, Trump basically has gone back and forth. I don't know where he stands on the Strait of Hormuz. At one moment he says it's not for us to handle. Somebody else, can take care of it because it's nothing important for us, or it'll be taken care of naturally. Another moment it becomes the most critical thing that the administration wants to ensure the opening of the Strait of Hormuz. And the latest, because the ceasefire negotiations fell apart, we're now blocking the blockers from so we'll see. But going back to the thing at the end of the last segment, there's just certain strategies that there are two things to come to mind, and they're kind of related. The one, of course, is the blockade of Cuba, which has gone on since the 50s, late 50s, and it just hasn't been at all successful, and it gives the Cuban and there was a meet the press on Sunday. I rarely watch TV on Sunday morning, but there was a presentation on and a radio an analyst, and he was saying that making some expressions about what was going to happen on what's his name, Cancel, the president of Cuba, some of the things that he was going to be saying on Sunday at this Meet the Press program, and he was again using because of the blockade. That's why people are suffering so much in Cuba. So they blame the U.S. and the blockade for. As far as I'm concerned, ineptitude to a great extent in their economic, programs and all. But of course, the blockades have hurt, and now really hurting because it's really tightened up, and especially the oil. They have a lot, very few, one Russian, and all. So, let's see whether it achieves what the U.S. wants to achieve, a regime change in Cuba. Which similar to Iran, I think everybody in the world would like to see, better, more democracy and better economic development in those countries. And another strategy that comes to mind for years, and it's kind of related as the U.S. tightens blowing up these drug boats. And just pressing really hard on drug interdiction and all, and then and happening in Puerto Rico, latest a policeman was killed helping in terms of a raid, dealing with a raid in arms interdiction. All really having to do with the illegal drugs, and it seems to me a policy that has gone on for forever, and we really have to change the strategy in order to reduce the violence from drugs. We could make a lot of money making illegal, like we do with cigarettes and gambling and a whole bunch of other things that we shouldn't be allowing, and just reduce the violence. We tried with alcohol and the prohibition. We it didn't work, but it hasn't happened in the drug. It should be treated as a medical problem, and legalized with a lot of fiscalization and making money on it for the government and using it for health reasons that we need, and for better prison systems and more rehabilitation and everything, and education, et cetera. Just it has been so frustrating me to see it now. It's very difficult for Puerto Rico can't do it by itself. Of course, we have this part of the United States, and even the United States by itself, you know, Portugal has done quite a bit. Netherlands has done something, but when it's individual countries, it's a little bit harder. But even them I understand Portugal has been pretty successful. So that's one of those strategies, like the blockades, that you just wonder a year, you know, decades after decades go through, and the more you eliminate drug points. The more violence happens, the more deaths take place, the higher is the cost of drugs, and it's just a vicious circle. Anyway, my two cents, you know, on that. Changing the topic again, going from the violence and all to a little bit to the sublime, and I'm kind of laughing because. My wife, my dear wife, Pinky, has a National Geographic subscription. She finally canceled it, but has been very, very slow in reading the different periodicals that come out, and I'm always kind of smiling at it. She reads tremendously. You know, she always has one or two books, and they're about 3 inches, 4 inches thick. I just seeing the book would not allow me to get started. But the National Geographic, and they're in the bathroom where we she has it. I looked at, you know, by the November 2017 edition. So, you know, it's almost, you know, 9 years going on 10. 9 years, you know, what stuck out over the you know, where it was is why vaccines matter. And I pulled it out, and there the heading is "The Search for Happiness: What We Can Learn from Costa Rica, Denmark, and Singapore, the Most Joyful Places on the Planet." And so I decided to read the articles and kind of reflect on them. We had in the past reviewed these three locations. With what we call the blue zones. It was Japan's another one, and I believe there's a place in Greece so there were five blue zones that had been in the past, and three of them were this. I don't recall whether the blue zone article I think came out before 2017. I'm not sure, but in any case, they kind of related, and they go with the World Happiness Report. And what's interesting is they take these three locations and choose a person, you know, within those three, and kind of discuss why they understand they're happy, that those particular three persons, and how they relate to the happiness culture in that country. And, you know, not completely convinced on a few things, but let's just go over it and reflect on them. The first person in Costa Rica, Alejandro Zúñiga, and he's a middle-aged father, and he's, you know, socializes 6 hours a day. He's a market sells avocado at the public market. And he says he sleeps at least 7 hours most nights, walks to work, and eats 6 servings of fruits and vegetables most days. He works no more than 40 hours a week at a job he loves, which with coworkers he enjoys. And he spends a few hours every week volunteering and on weekend he worships God, you know, very spiritual person, and indulges his passion for soccer, the team that he religiously goes to and not probably not a very good team. And in the article, he won the lottery. He said that a friend called him that he had won, and he thought it was a joke and said it was a bad joke and hung up. But the next day, he went to the market. Everybody was cheering him and you know, that he had won. And it was about, in Colonos, so it was $93,000. He proceeded to give it out generously to everybody and ended up broke, you know, within months. A person that had helped him at the market and who needed help gave and one of the things he had, he says he gave to the four mothers of his seven children. So, you know, Alejandro was kind of the opposite of the next person. And basically his happiness was just living a balanced, low-key, happy-go-lucky life. And, you know, so it's they find, you know, living joyfully a life to its fullest is basically how it defines his happiness and all. And the next person, Clemensen, from Denmark, and you know, basically, she's a a social worker, and you know, works her normal hours, and then you have a safety net in Denmark, which gives a sense of security and all, and you know, married, happily married with three children, and lives a purposeful life, and describes that as the Aristotle definition of happiness, eudaimonic, eudaimonic, happiness. That's eudaimonic is the Greek word for happiness, and basically Aristotle is that true happiness comes only from a life of meaning, of doing what is worth doing. You know, the good life of Aristotle. We've discussed that in the past, and so it's you know, happiness is a life of meaning, and that within the Denmark culture, she kind of represents that person. And then the Singapore is his name, you know, is Douglas Foo, and a successful entrepreneur, one of the bigger fast food chains in Singapore. It says drives a $750,000 BMW. Cars in Singapore are insanely expensive, and you know, you got to be really, really rich to have a car and bring it and drive it into the city, because that $750,000 BMW may be just a normal BMW. I mean, which is always expensive, but you know, not four, five, six times what happened in Singapore. Lives in a $10 million house. And he's married with four well-behaved children who excel at school. He puts himself through school with four jobs, and he has $59 million multinational company that he's developed. He works about 60 hours, 14-hour days between his businesses, and then some 14 philanthropic organizations that he does. So so he's Taipei, Taipei, and basically describes it as a person, you know, of ambition and accomplishments. I mean, he represents a life satisfaction strand of happiness. This article says this evaluation, happiness internationally is considered the gold standard metric of well-being. Well, you know, it's the closest one to my definition of living, personal values with a sense of self-satisfaction and peace, but when you go into the things, you're wondering, with respect to Sunyiga, Alexandro, he says he doesn't need any of those things, you know, any of the trappings, the material trappings. So our sense of self-esteem. Well, I don't agree. I think he has different values, and he has his sense of self-esteem of what's important for him. And then in terms of the person from Denmark, good life, etc. And they use the word trygid, you know, a snuggle, tucked in feeling, feeling comfortable. But it's very personal. I think, you know, personal values, and the personal values there. And I fear that the person in Singapore, fool will tell you he's happy, he still feels he hasn't arrived. So this person, very materially successful and very philanthropic and volunteering, still sort of is pushing. So I find the article kind of with people that I think it comes down personal. You know, each one has personal values. Each one has what gives them satisfaction. I fear that some of them aren't dealing, you know, with the day-to-day and being happy and feeling well-being and satisfied and at peace on a day-to-day basis, looking more towards the future. So those are my reflections on that particular. There was an article also covers Boulder, Colorado, and we'll cover that next week. But those are my reflections on this article. So live your personal values with a sense of satisfaction, and do it daily. Don't wait for the future, and with peace, self-satisfaction and peace. So take care. Programs come to an end. This is Jorge Gonzalez, Reflections. See you next week.
Allegro WIPR 91.3 FM was proud to present Reflections, hosted by Jorge Gonzalez, reflecting on events with our well-being in mind.